All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off. And believe me, there are so many ways. And what you can do to stop them. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for president of the United States, currently in the race for governor of Texas 2022. It's going to be an awesome year and a half. The redacted caucus, we're going to hear from them tonight. A voice for the silenced. Trent Ortner is a founding member of the Redacted Caucus, holding a unity rally on April 24th in Austin. I will be there as well because it sounds like so much fun. I was like, get me tickets. I'm kidding. It's free. He's also a founding member of the Hibiscus Society and other Boogaloo related groups. So awesome guy. This is going to be an awesome conversation. We're going to hear about the rally. We're going to hear about all kinds of interesting stuff. What the Boogaloo is. I know if you're listening to this, you probably already know the Boogaloo is our friend. They are not the terrorists that the government would like us to believe they are. But before we get started, if you're watching the live stream, please remember to like and share. Start a watch party on Facebook. Share the YouTube link on Twitter. And make sure you send in your comments and questions. We do see them. And if it's something like, what about the roads? Maybe we'll answer it. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the Nug of Knowledge. Indoor-grown, chemical-free, smokable hemp flower and Delta 8 vape cartridges, legal in all 50 states. Get elevated at nugofknowledge.com. Head on over there. And now on to the show. Trent, welcome. How's it going?
Good, brother. How are you?
Awesome. Doing good. Man, where do we begin? I just had like a total brain fart. Is taxation theft?
Absolutely, man. I mean, it's our money. Give it back.
Right. Okay. So I was just talking to you before we started about how I didn't get much sleep at all last night because I was working to update one of the websites. For some reason, I got on Twitter because like I'm waiting for the web developer to get back to me. So I get on Twitter. And I start finding this, there was this guy, he had all these tweets about, you know, it's one of these tax the rich kind of people. I just started like going into, I gotta go back and reread those tweets. I don't even know if they made any sense. Maybe they didn't. Cause you know, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like dying from lack of sleep, but yeah, it was really interesting. And you know me, I tried to like not be offensive and just kind of like drop some information like, no, we're all getting taxed at 88%, which I know is going to go in one ear and out the other probably, but wow, that was just the stuff they say always blows my mind. But anyways, so Trent, let's give me a background. What's, because I know you've been involved with a lot of different organizations, Boogaloo, different groups. What's kind of like, what's your history? How did you get into this?
I've always been involved with the Libertarian Party, like off and on since 2011, I believe. I kind of got into the Occupy Wall Street thing with a couple of friends, and that's kind of where I got my start with like the activism. From there, I was in the background, kind of just watching everybody and seeing what everything done is being done. And then, when I had my daughter, I freaked out because I tried to think of like, man, what's her life going to be like in the next 10 or 15 years? And it scared the shit out of me. And I just couldn't, I started looking for, you know, an outlet to see where I could start, you know, at least talking about or conversing with other people that feel the same way that I do. And that's where I kind of got into the Liberty and Boogaloo movement. And then we just started doing protests and hitting the streets.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about, I kind of want to come back to the Occupy movement, because I think I was kind of, that's kind of where I was getting interested in stuff too. That was like around the whole Ron Paul thing. So we'll come back to that, but maybe we should talk about that now, because I just totally forgot the other thing I was going to say. Oh, the Boogaloo.
Yeah.
So I know this is like a very controversial issue, especially with, you know, the government. I mean, not like they like making friends anyway, but saying that the Boogaloo is a domestic terrorist group and, you know, all this other nonsense. What is the Boogaloo, in your opinion?
In my opinion? Well, I mean, it's like I stated before, you know, I was scared. And what our country was coming to, and all the different things that were happening, and how the divide was growing deeper and deeper and deeper. Like our presidents weren't getting along with the elected leaders in Congress or the Senate, and we were falling deeper and deeper in debt. Like, we haven't had an actual budget since 2000, or either 1999 or 2000. They can't even come up with a good budget. They just keep spending. And, you know, I started to see people in the news getting in trouble for just voicing their opinions. And I was like, fuck that, man. Like, that's not the way that our country's supposed to be. You know, we have our First Amendment rights. We're supposed to be able to say and think however we feel, no matter what the context or tone behind it is. The Boogaloo, though, like, the government is scared of the Boogaloo. It's not because we are threatening or trying to put pressure violently on people or politicians. They're scared of people actually unifying and having the same conversations that I was having about the infringements and the chain and our rights, our God-given rights being changed. And then I got in trouble myself. I'd never been in trouble in my life. I got in trouble for a fire that happened in 2014 when I was going through some serious PTSD stuff and depression. And I was undiagnosed. And I got a firsthand look of the criminal justice system and how it actually works. And you and I have talked about that before. You know, you had some really good examples too. And I started doing my research and looking, and like, and it was just more and more and more examples of bad policing, bad convictions, people getting hemmed up and thrown away for the dumbest stuff and then coming out. And the worst part about, you know, these felony convictions is when you come out, you don't ever come back. You can't come back and be the same. You can't come back and be, you know, another equal member in society. You're subpar.
Right. You're blacklisted.
It's another form of slavery, man.
Yeah.
And so with the Boogaloo, you know, we started talking about these issues, and we started going out and unifying with BLM and some Antifa groups and like marching together. And it really just spurred my attention and made me want to continue that down that path and even do better, make it be more efficient at it.
Yeah, it's interesting, because, you know, a lot of the things that you talk about, these are issues that a lot of people are very interested in. You know, we see with all of these protests going on, with everybody hitting the streets, whether it's violent protests or not, these are people who are concerned with First Amendment rights, although there are some of them who don't want First Amendment rights. It's their speech and no one else's. But you have, I think even people on both sides, Democrats and Republicans, left and right, however you want to slice it, you have people on both sides who are interested in some of these issues, but then there's the Boogaloo, and the Boogaloo comes along, and it's always kind of associated. And you know, this is, you know, I became a huge fan of the idea that the Second Amendment protects the First. But now it's like they're trying to say that because a lot of people are coming out and using their firearms defensively, and they're not even using them, right? Just having them to be used defensively, that somehow this is terrorism. And what's absolutely shocking about this is, like, anyone with a brain can compare the Boogaloo movement to the government, right? And say, okay, look, the Boogaloo movement has this many guns. The government has this many guns. The Boogaloo movement has not killed a single innocent person. How many has the government killed?
Right.
You can make all kinds of comparisons like this, but of course, people don't think rationally, right? We're just controlled by our emotions based on all this rhetoric. Yeah.
They see like the flash headlines on TV. That was a serious issue that we ran into last year, was our media optics. We were trying to talk to journalists and like actually explain to them that we're not trying to start a civil war. People they immediately turned Boogaloo and they said Boogaloo means civil war. No, Boogaloo means revolution. It's a revolutionary thought. Well, you can have a revolution without bloodshed. And like you were talking about the guns, like people they also try to make that into a fear tactic, like a like we were trying to scare people and with our guns in public, but that's not the case. The biggest reason that I have ever
seen, is that why the police carry guns?
Right. And like the biggest reason that I've ever seen people protesting with guns is because it keeps the police from fucking with us. They don't want to start that fight. And like when I was in Austin, we were doing the Garrett Foster Memorial stuff, the police were trying to actively engage us. They actually pulled their guns on us, like 10 or 15 cops. And then they realized that they were encircled by about 50 or 60 guys loaded with guns. And they realized that was a bad idea. And, you know, and there was another thing. They tried to push out in the to the residents around the area that we were planning on protesting that we were left-wing Antifa militiamen, and we were going to storm into their homes and turn their balconies into sniper nests. Like I had the memorandum somewhere. It was from the FBI field office.
Wow.
They were pushing it out to people, and that was completely opposite of what anything that we had ever planned was.
Yeah, that sounds like a government tactic.
They did it to the Black Panthers in the 60s, man. The FBI used the media to portray the Black Panthers as something that it's not. And that impact is still happening today. I still know people, especially down here in the South, that still view Black Panthers and BLM as aggressors.
Right. And I think even, you know, to the idea of BLM, there's still, I think there is a division, but I mean, that group is so big. There are people who are involved with that. I mean, you have an actual organization that's run by self-declared Marxists, but then you also have a lot of people who are, you know, they show up because it's BLM and they want to support the idea that Black Lives Matter, and they're not necessarily supporting Marxism. And it's, you know, this is really difficult because this, you know, this gets into the idea of we hear people all the time say, well, if government didn't regulate the charities, how would you know which ones are legitimate? Well, they're not regulating the charities and you don't know which ones are legitimate. So if you donate clothes and you think those clothes are going to, you know, the homeless, it's like you might be right, you might be wrong. And it's the same thing like when you have an organization like BLM, when they're raising all that money. Is that going to promote the idea that Black Lives Matter? Is it going to criminal justice reform or any of this? Or is it going to some secret Democrat, you know, whatever?
Like you were saying, there's a difference. There's BLM, the thought, the movement, the cause.
Right.
But then there people create an organization, a nonprofit called BLM. And that's where you get the Marxist ideals of the actual organization.
Was that? Do you have, because the way you just said it was that the movement came first. Do you know if that's true or not, or if the organization came? Do you know what order those came in officially?
That I don't know.
I've been trying to figure that out because, like, you know, I'm kind of like It could have worked. It could have worked the way you said it, where, like, you know, like these people who work for the government, they're, I'm sure, always keeping their eyes peeled for, like, oh, what's the next big thing? And then let's take it over and, you know, dump a bunch of Coke money on it and, you know, use it to our benefit. I know that sounds really weird. If you don't know who the Koch brothers are. but yeah, it really is. And, you know, I want to go back again to the point you said about, you know, peaceful protesting while armed. Like, this was, I mentioned that one of the introductory points for me getting into, like, liberty and freedom was around the Occupy time. And I saw what the police in New York were doing versus the police in Arizona. And, like, the police in Arizona were just like, whatever. It's protests. They're here. And New York, they were just trying to totally crack down. Now, I don't know how much of this had to do with it, but the protesters in Arizona were completely surrounded by all kinds of, you know, I don't know, militia, whatever, armed citizens in camouflage and rifles. And the police didn't want to mess with that. Would they have anyway? I don't know, because not every state is as extreme as New York. But, you know, and maybe that's why they're not that extreme. Maybe because they've had, you know, Arizona's kind of had that culture for a long time, whereas New York's been down this path of, you know, surrender your guns and give it all to government. California's been down that path. And it's kind of like, I think when you have that culture, surrender all your power to the government, then, you know, that's kind of, so they don't have any guns. They have, and it's like you start building this culture over time, and then that's just the manifestation of what it is. So now you have a protest, and it's like, okay, well, the government gets to decide whether or not you get to protest, and, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, and they've already, you know, it's like that establishing dominance, right? Like, it's already been established who's making the rules. Whereas Texas and Arizona, it's more like, no, we the people make the rules. New York and California, it's like, no, the government makes the rules and everyone's just a slave to that system. I think it's
for your safety. It's for, just trust us.
Yeah, it's nuts. We have a question coming in here. Out of curiosity, what do you think of Night Watchman State? And somebody's Liberty Prime is saying Night Watchman State can be easily corrupted, and they're asking what ways. You have anything to say about that? I'm not even sure what Night Watchman State is.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is, honestly. Hold on, I can look it up.
I'm like, is that like Neighborhood Watch, the Boogaloo version of Neighborhood Watch, or is that like where the government's snooping on you day and night? I don't know. It could go either way. That's an ambiguous name.
Oh, it's a minarchy model of the state of what, and it functions as of the non-aggression principles.
Just police and judges.
Of military. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of that.
I've never heard it called that before, though.
Yeah, I think I might have. I mean, in my opinion, that's what the state would be. But the thing is, like, I have this argument with anarchists all the time, right? If you were to take the government that we have now and take away everything that it does that violates the rights of somebody, take away all the theft that it does, take away all the murdering and caging of innocent, nonviolent people, what do you have left? And if you were to compare that to, let's say, like an anarcho-capitalist who would say, like, yeah, everything should be private, well, you'd still have, so it would be private, but you'd still have like courts and police and that kind of stuff, right? But it would just be private. If you took all of these NAP violations or all these rights violations away from the government, that's basically what it would be. Now, what are one of those rights? To create a competing system. So that kind of fits into that model too. And I think that's interesting because, as you know, in the Night Watchman State, I think that's kind of like, at the end of the day, you have this thing that does something, and it's to kind of like help people, help individuals in society deal with problems of crime. And it's like, whether that's government or a private organization is just a label at the end of the day, right? Because you can have a private organization that violates people's rights. Like, what technically makes it government?
I mean, look at the Middle East with, like, trying to think of the, like, Triple Canopy is the name of the contracting firm now, but when the murders in Haditha, the Haditha murders with private contractors, you know, like, that was a private organization, and they trampled all over those people. Like, anything is corruptible. Like, and that's what I have such a hard time with people saying, like, well, we should just have this society where everything is equal and there's limited everything and privatize everything. But that doesn't change the fact that humans are innately corrupt. Like, there are people, there are always going to be people that want to have more power over a certain group of people or over everyone. You're not going to get rid of those character traits. They're bred, you know. I don't think people are born with them, but I think that they develop over time. And it's like socialism. That's the same thing with socialism. Socialism would be an amazing way to live. If everything was split, we all live peacefully, and the government, like, you know, all, you know, had this part to be charged with, but then they can sit there and be in charge of your supplies. And people that are in charge of your food and supplies, if they decide to stop it, what are you going to do? You lose the ability to eat. And that happened in the Soviet Union right after World War II. They killed, like, fucking millions of people when the government just, like, it was a government-led starvation.
Right. Well, what's interesting too is, like, you know, there's this whole idea of, like, yeah, this, everybody should be equal, but there's so many ways in which it's not. And this is like, so this would be kind of, I know I'll get accused of, like, well, that's hypothetical or that's extreme, right? But let's say extreme equality is everybody has a house. It's an equal house, right? It's a two-story house with four bedrooms and everything is equal about it. But one person says, I don't want a house. I want to live in an RV and travel the country. So he says, yeah, so you know what? I don't need this house. So he sells the house for some money. He buys an RV and you know, whatever. He's got, like, you know, plenty of supply of gas with the leftover money for, you know, whatever. He's now no longer equal because he doesn't have a house and somebody else has two. And it's not because he's less of a human or because of society has ripped him off or anything. It's because he's decided that he doesn't want the same thing. And we have to realize, like, there's 350 million people in this country. They all have different needs and wants. And so, you know, equality is really far-fetched. Now, you can always say, well, yeah, but everybody should have equal rights and to, you know, to be able to do whatever they want. And yeah, that's true too. But in that type of equality, the outcome is that everybody will not be equal.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, and this is where I can actually sympathize with a lot of the socialists is, you know, I can agree with them when they look at the system and say, yeah, but the system is not fair. It's ripping us off. And it's like, They know that, right? And that's almost like a feeling, right? Like, we feel something is really off about our society. But to the socialists, they're told, it's the rich. Go eat the rich.
Right.
When in reality, it's no, the people telling you to go eat the rich, who are the government, those are the people who are your problem.
They're also the rich. They're just telling you to go after a different sector of rich people.
The other rich. It's amazing.
I think equal rights. I mean, that to me, that is the ideal structure. It doesn't have to be equality within income or equality with jobs, because there are always people that go to school longer than somebody else. You can't say I want the same income as a doctor that spent 7 to 8 years in college if you're just graduating high school. Like, you know,
right.
You don't have
why would I go? Or why would I go study for 8 years to become a doctor if I'm going to get paid the same?
And to me, like that part isn't fair. Like income equality when it comes to race and gender, there should always be like if there's a doctor and there's a doctor that they have the exact same skill set, one's a female, one's a male, you know, they're not always going to get the same income because the female could go work at a company that is willing to pay her more. And then the male could work at a nonprofit and get paid less, but they still have the same income equality. Trying to equate that is impossible. And that's an argument that I hear a lot is, you know, income equality, men and women and, you know, and race, but you're never going to be able to find that. It's just impossible. You can't, there's no median value that everybody's going to be able to go off of because everybody's different. Everybody can, some people coming out of high school have better people skills than somebody else. So that person with people skills right. is going to get a job better than the guy that sat in his mom's basement and played video games all the time.
Right. Well, what's interesting. So somebody, you talk about the income gap. Somebody posted, you know, why does, and they had like a picture of some star NBA player. I'm not a sports ball follower. So at all, NBA player. Yeah. He makes $30 million a year. And then like the star WNBA player. And they're like, she only makes $300,000 a year. And then they were talking about the income, the gender income gap. And I'm like, that's like saying, hey, you know what? Metallica makes $100 million a year, and I have a band, and we play down the street at the local bar every weekend, and we only make $500 a year. Like,
right? That goes to the whole privatization of business. Like the WNBA doesn't bring in the type of income that the NBA does, so they can't pay their star athletes the same amount. And they're in no way, they're not even in the same class of profit.
This stuff is like, it's so obvious to like, I think people who understand how these things work, right? Cause like, I mean like, okay. I don't know how old I was when I learned that, you know, the NBA makes, or the teams make most of their money selling beer at the games, right? And you know, some money, merchandise, and like all this other stuff. That's where a lot of their money comes from. It's not even from the advertising while they're playing the games on the, you know, on TV and all this other stuff, right? Except for Super Bowl, they get a shitload for that. But
right.
So like, if you know this kind of stuff, then it becomes obvious. But I think to a lot of people who never, it's almost like they don't start asking those questions, or for whatever reason, they never go down that path where they find out that information. And to them, it's just like there's this big, like, ethereal organization that's the NBA and the WNBA. And I don't know, maybe they're the same organization and they just decided they're going to pay their women less. I don't know exactly what they're thinking, but it has to be an absence of information, because there's no way you can look at that and make that type of claim,
right?
Knowing like just the basics about how that system works,
and that's a problem. And it can go to even broader, you know, spectrum of topics. Like the WNBA, one, they don't bring in anywhere near the amount of ticket sales. They're smaller arenas. People, they're the television. That could be one of the biggest things is they're not broadcasted like the NBA is. They don't have the deals with like CBS and NBC and Fox and all that to be on.
Whose fault is that?
Is it the
networks? Because the networks are just chasing the profit, so it must be our fault. It's because we're not watching it. So there needs to be a law that says any bar that shows basketball games must equally show women's basketball.
Right.
And anybody who goes to watch an NBA game is only allowed to go once they have gone to an equal number of WNBA games. Like, I mean, that's the type of system you would have to put into place to make sure that
regulated equality.
Yeah. And it's absolutely insane when you start to try to like put those pieces together.
But you want to get into the rally, or do you want to?
Yeah, let's talk about the rally. So April 24th, which happens to be my birthday, by the way.
Oh, no shit. You didn't tell me that.
Yeah. So I'm going to be there with I'll bring a cake or some donuts. They got some good donuts out there in Austin. so you were talking about organizing this. And you originally invited me to come out there and speak. And I was like, okay, like we were talking about like maybe doing something about taxes. And I was going to go out there and, you know, give the public an earful about how screwed up the tax system is. But this is so much more than that. This is a big unity rally, and you've really been like focusing on trying to bring in different groups to the Democrats have been talking about unity, but at the same time, they're like pissing on everybody else.
Right.
So tell me about this. What's this all about?
So, this started out as, like you said, we were just going to have a rally, and we were just going to try to hit the public and give them some information and try to garner attention with the public. We're picking a park that's right on the Riverwalk in Austin called Butler Park. And there should be a lot of good foot traffic around there. We're going to have a PA system, and we're just going to have speakers, and we're going to have stands with swag that you can buy and that you can get and pass around. But it's really just to start bringing people together. Like everybody that I talk to, left, right, center, right, center, left, they all have the same end game goal of wanting to have a better country. It doesn't matter, you know, if you believe that, you know, firearms and gun rights are a big portion, or if you believe that justice reform is the main topic that we got to focus on. We all can focus together. And that's why I've been involved with the Libertarian Party so much and trying to get Texas. I'm just now working with like the Texas LP and trying to get in there and start focusing our message and finding candidates to run that will have a chance in getting past the 3% margin that we get every election. And that's where this unity rally kind of comes into play is to push a message out to people in the public that don't know, or they've only heard on the news what libertarianism or that kind of ideology is about. And like, you know, it's been demonized. There's been, you know, Brennan, the ex-CIA director, came out and lumped us together with neo-Nazis and, you know, fucking terrorists. And, you know, that's not the case with libertarianism. We pull our beliefs from the right, the left, and we have our own center beliefs. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be working together, reaching across the aisle and working with different parts. We should be the bonding material to get the left and the right to work together. Because right now, there is a deeper and deeper divide that's going on every single day, it feels like, between the left and the right. We're going to be meeting at the park. I'm going to have some speakers. Like I said, Dan is going to be there speaking. I'm going to speak. And then I have a couple other surprise speakers that I'll let other people know in a few weeks. But we're also going to be talking about like gun rights and gun bills in Texas, where there are 27 different gun bills that are trying to get passed through the legislature, ranging from banning private firearm sales and at gun show, red flag confiscation, banning the transfer and possession of standard capacity magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, repealing the Texas campus carry law, raising the minimum wage or raising the minimum age for purchase, and replacing the state firearms preemption law, allowing local governments to restrict gun sales as they please. So that means that counties and cities can start making their own gun restrictive laws. It gives them the platform to move on from that. And, you know, another topic that we're going to hit is Texas is trying, and specifically our governor is trying to push legislation through that would turn protesters that can be labeled as rioters at any point. And once they're labeled as rioter, they are charged with a felony. They're going to make rioting a felony in the state of Texas. And Kentucky is trying to pass a bill that would make insulting police officers in public a crime. I mean, that's it. I mean, yeah. I could keep going, and we're going to talk more and more about that at the rally. Like, there's just this unbelievable amount of bills and laws people all over the country they're trying to pass that are just little bit by bit eroding away at the Bill of Rights in our Constitution, to where they have full say in everything. And they use the term, like we were talking earlier, it's for your safety. Trust us for your safety. Let us be the beacon for you to look towards. And that's not the case. We know the government isn't looking out for us. They're looking for their own interests.
Right. Yeah. And it's just listening to you read off that list of bills. I mean, you know, okay, so, oh, well, yeah, you still have a right to own a gun. You just have to be a certain age before you can buy it. And it's like, okay, well, what if they're going to raise the age? What if they raised it to like 110?
Right.
Right. Like, I mean, it's like, oh, you can still own as many guns as you want. You just have to wait until you're 110. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. And of course, this is an extreme. And anybody, you know, anybody on the left, anybody who's a gun grabber would say, like, well, that's a stupid thing, because that's not what they're trying to do. And it's like, no, they're trying to make it harder and harder and harder for everybody. They're going to exclude one small group at a time, and it's death by a thousand paper cuts.
Right.
We know this because 100 years ago, it was a lot easier to get your hands on guns. And we didn't get here because somebody passed a bill. We got here because somebody passed 100 bills or 1,000 bills.
100 years ago, you could send your kid to the store to go pick up a new revolver for you, or a new hunting rifle. Like, and they could, yeah. And while they're there, they could get your liquor and your cigarettes too.
Yeah, and your fireworks.
Right.
it's absolutely insane, and it's. You know, a lot of it has to do with, I think, having things hidden from us. So, like, this is what I mean by that. Like, I've noticed a lot of people who don't like guns have never been around guns. I was afraid of guns growing up, right? Because I was indoctrinated by the DARE program. I was in California. Yeah. Nobody knew had guns. Yeah. My next door neighbor for a short while, when I was like, I don't know, maybe 6 or 8 or something, his dad was a cop. And I remember he had a shotgun in the living room, and I was like so fucking scared of it. Right. because it's like, oh, only criminals have shotguns. Oh, he's a cop. Oh, it's okay. But when you grow up in a place like Texas or Arizona or probably Alaska and Florida, where like guns are kind of everywhere, you like, people see them, they get used to them, they're not afraid of them, they get accustomed to them. When you see somebody carrying one, you're not like jumping into shock and panic, like, oh my God, he's got a gun. It's normal. And you also, you learn how to use them responsibly. There's not like there's not this fear and everything else. And what I think is really interesting about this is it happens with everything else. I mean, with homophobia, that was the same thing, right? Like, yeah, nobody, yeah. Like, oh, I don't know any gay people, but I hear they do this.
I grew up in the 80s, like in the 90s, and that, yeah, for sure. Like, I remember a gay person in our town, and he was like the gay person. And like my grandparents and my parents were like, hey, don't go over, because he had this store where you could, was like just like antique, it was like a pawn shop, but it also had like little knickknacks and stuff that you could buy. And we would go there and look at their knives and stuff. We wanted a knife, you know, pocket knives and whatnot. And like, I was told like, hey, be careful. You know, he touches little boys, but that wasn't, right. That wasn't the case at all. Like he's never been in trouble for it. That was just this fear. And like they told, and it made me think, oh no, watch out for him. He's going to rape me.
Right. And it's the same thing with racism. And like, what's interesting is like when you go to, especially smaller towns where they don't have a very diverse population, you see a lot more of that because they're not used to seeing it, especially if it's a town that doesn't watch a whole lot of TV, because TV has actually normalized a lot of that for us,
right?
Where, you know, you've got, I don't know how many TV shows have like a gay character in it, and it's like, okay, yeah, they're just one of the guys, whatever. They're not running around trying to, you know, rape the male cast or anything else. Right. Like sometimes they have a boyfriend they've normalized it. With race, I think they have in a way, but they've also, I mean, like you've got a lot of shows that show different races of families acting normally. And I think the Cosby Show was probably one of the earliest ones that kind of did that. But you also have a lot of TV that always portrays the black people as the drug dealers and the gangbangers and like all this other stuff.
Right.
Latinos, you know, all this other stuff. The Chinese are always like the triads and like, you know, the mafia. And they kind of do this with Italians, but it's like, you know, with a lot of mob movies and stuff. But if that's only like if there's an emphasis that somebody's Italian, it's like it's probably going to go that way. But if there's no emphasis and they're just a white person who happens to be, you know, a little bit of Italian and there's no stress on that, no emphasis, right, it's like there's no correlation to any mafia. It's and they do this. And like with some races, it's more subtle than others, but they're playing all these stereotypes. But I guess my point is, if you live in a remote area where you don't have minorities, you don't have you don't have anybody who's gay or trans or like, you know, different from you and your family, you don't see it. And if you are watching it from TV, it's skewed. Mm-hmm. And if this is all you know, this is where you get misinformation versus when you grow up around a lot of diversity and you're like, yeah, I mean, I know black people, like I know that's not a representation of them.
Right.
So I guess what I'm, the point I was trying to get at this was back to the, you know, the same thing with the guns is people need to be exposed to all of this so that they can see it for what it is and not the bullshit propaganda that comes to us from the TV. And again, going back to the Boogaloo thing, right? I mean, hang out with the Boogaloo, find some Boogaloo groups, go hang out with them, and you'll find out they're actually a bunch of really great guys who are interested in protecting your freedom and giving you a better life, unlike the government.
I would say that a very, very large majority are some spectrum of a libertarian. Either they could be ANCAP, and you know, they could have some anarchist or minarchist views, but they are all in that same center group where as long as you're not, you know, infringing on us, everything should be great. As long as you're not being a bigot or racist, you know, cool, you're welcome, anybody's welcome in here. And they tried to classify us as white supremacists, and then they were still like pushing that message while we were going to protest and getting media coverage working with BLM, like working side by side. Like the ones that I've been to, we were there as security protecting BLM from the police. Like we were that middle ground. And I still talk to organizers in Texas. I'm trying to work with another guy that I've worked with for a while in the BLM movement. His name is Patrick, and he organizes a lot of stuff in the Texas area. But yeah, you're guns in Texas are normal, and I can tell you, like, guys that carry guns in public, that carry open carry, like, I feel more safe around them knowing that I have more people carrying guns, you know? is that Myra?
Yeah.
Hey, Myra.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it really, it still comes down to that exposure. people need to see that. And it's unfortunate that the people who control the media want them to see something else. And so that's what a lot of people are seeing. There's this one that's going on right now. The whole massage parlor shooting thing. They're trying to say it was a hate crime against Asian Americans. And I see all these, you know, Asian influencers and celebrities and news media people who are, oh, I'm afraid for my life. And it's all because they were Asian. And it's like, no, that had nothing to do with it. In fact, the guy, I think he ended up shooting 8 or 9 people and 2 of them were white.
Right.
So it's like, no, it was a crime. He's going to jail for it. Was it racially motivated? No, it was, he even said he was like an extreme, Christian type guy who wanted to remove temptation or something like that. So these were the places that tempted him. And what's interesting is like a lot of people are saying like, oh yeah, well he drove past all these strip clubs to get to these places and he didn't go into the strip clubs and shoot those places. Well, I'm sure they've got Asian strippers too.
Right.
So it's like none of that makes sense, but this was his target. It was sex workers. But they're twisting it and turning it into something completely different, which is, I mean, it's typical. That's what the media does because they know. Yeah. Cause they know most people don't like most. I don't know. There's probably a statistic on it. I mean, most guys have been to a strip club at some point in their life. Right. But I think there's probably a different demographic from that. And then a much smaller demographic who probably goes to the massage parlors. The guys who have been to like a strip club for like a bachelor party or something else, there's probably a much smaller group that goes regularly. To look at all that, it's like most Americans, I don't think know as much about that world as they think they do. They only know, again, what they've seen on TV, right? Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. And then you take that and you fuse it with a story about like, oh, this guy, he was racist against Asians and he was doing another mass shooting, going from place to place, killing as many. And it's like, what is this doing? Like, are you priming us for another gun grab? Are you trying to prime us for like, oh, we have to address another racism problem that is widespread? That's not really like, what's their goal here?
It's, you know, the only reason they're pushing that racist message right now is because the guy was white. If it had been in any other ethnic group, they would have found another narrative to push it down. And right. They started, I've seen this hashtag going around like stop Asian racism or stop Asian violence. And sure, yeah, absolutely. Like, well, we should stop violence for everybody. Like, why? You don't have to specify. And
right,
it's creating
more division.
Yes, exactly. It's making other people hate other people, and or be not so much. I wouldn't say hate, but I would be self-aware and not open to being around those types of people. I know white people that are racist, and I know, but I know black people that are racist as well. It's not we're not in Nazi Germany. This is not a specific type of people going after a specific type of people. It's everybody. There are people that have hate in their heart, regardless of what race there are. And we gotta. Why can't we just be friends, man? Why can't we just all be friends? Why do we have to? Why do we have to fucking kill each other?
I mean, this is what I see. Because this has happened to me like a million times, right? I'll be sitting having a conversation with somebody, and I guess I don't look Jewish enough to be like obviously Jewish, even though I'm really kind of an atheist. But I guess like I've never understood this. Judaism is not, it's not just a religion; it's also a race.
Right.
So I'll be talking to somebody, and like we can be having a great conversation about ending the Fed or like the bank system, like ripping everybody. Like it can be about anything. I know I said anything and I'm like listing like all basically the same thing, but and then they throw something out there like, yeah, and it's all the Jews. And it's like, I've been in that situation so many times. And like, at the end of the day, I'm just like, well, I mean, this guy's pretty smart. He understands that like this system exists and it's ripping everybody off. He just doesn't know that, like, or he's been told that this is a race issue instead of an elitist issue or whatever else you want to call it.
Right.
And so I could very easily say, hey, you know what? You're a piece of shit, and start a fight with the guy and like leave. Right. Or, and this is what I usually do, is I say, hey, you know what? I'm actually of Jewish descent, and you know, we're talking, we're on the same side here. And usually that alone is enough for them to be like, oh, I feel like such an asshole. And, right. You know, like, wow, here we are agreeing on everything. I had no idea. That's so weird. I didn't know Jews existed outside of the banking system trying to take over the world. But it's, and then you've got the, there was this guy who was, it was a black guy who was running around hugging the KKK member. He joined the KKK and made friends with them. But there was I don't know. There's all these great stories where people just go and like kill them with kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is interesting, like what you were talking about, like when they start creating this division, is like they're preventing that from happening. Because look at the whole Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter thing, right? I mean, they're both technically right. True. And it's right. Like, when one person says the other, it's like you should say, yeah, all lives matter and Black Lives Matter, instead of saying, no, fuck all lives matter because Black Lives Matter. And like, it turned into this divisive, like, no, I'm right, you're wrong, when it's like, hey, guys, right. You're all saying the same thing. And, right. You know, and I get it. Like the Black Lives Matter is like, yeah, but we're in trouble right now and we're calling for help to the specific issue.
Yeah,
like,
we're getting killed by the cops.
Yeah, I totally get that. But at the same time, it's like, okay, so you have these assholes who are trying to like downplay what you're trying to do. And at the same time, because that frustrates you and that angers you, you're going to try to downplay what they're doing instead right. of just like, just let them have it. Be the bigger person or some. I mean, that's the thing. One side has to be the bigger person. Let the other person have it and then say, yeah, you know what? You're right. Okay, cool. Anytime the government kills anybody that they're not supposed to, I'll say that just because some people are going to get offended. Well, sometimes the government has to kill, which I don't agree with. But
here's the thing, though, with that, man. Like, yes, Black Lives Matter, all lives matter, and it's a divisive tactic. The problem that we haven't been focusing on, and it's something that you and I have been talking about, is there is an elitist group of people that are different kinds of races, and race doesn't even fucking matter to them. They're the ones that are pushing down this type of divisive tactics so they can be more in control. It's a boys club or even girls club of elitist people. Like people try to say Trump was racist. I'm like, no, Trump's not racist. Trump's an elitist. If he believes that he's better than all people, doesn't matter what color their skin are, who they are. And those are the people that are trying to take control and control the economy and just continue to bring in billions and billions and billions of dollars. Like Bill Gates is like that. It's funny. Like if you look at the recent COVID bill, they've allotted $3.7 billion to Bill Gates and Melinda Gates' Asian nonprofit or Asian AIDS nonprofit. Like I got agents in my head.
I was like, no, wait a minute. What?
No, they're AIDS nonprofit. Like, what does that have to do with COVID relief? How does that help people that are out of jobs? But, you know, it goes to your point, too, you know?
Yeah. I think that's right, too. And it's like, well, why would they want to do that? Why would they want to divide us and like, oh, power, control? Yeah. And all that other stuff. But how does that actually really play out? And I think it comes down to, you know, it still comes down to the same stuff. They want to disarm us. They want to take our rights away. They want to control everything that they want to micromanage the economy so that we're producing what they want us to produce instead of producing what we want to produce. And they do that by saying, oh, there's a bunch of racists out there. We got to take their guns away. They're going to shoot you in the middle of the night if we don't take their guns away. And so they use these divisive issues to further their agendas that they've kind of hit a wall with. I mean, let's face it, in America, it's been hard to advance. Like, you know, like New Zealand just came around and said, like, yeah, we're going to ban all the guns. And overnight, that was that. And I'm sure they've tried that in the United States and it just doesn't work. So they need to create these divisive fears. They need to create these boogeymen for us to make us afraid so that they can say, well, pass this bill. Remember the it was going back to the Occupy Wall Street, right? The 2008, the first bailout, which was $700 billion. They basically, they had a bill. They went to Congress and they said, you guys have like 5 hours to vote on this. And if you don't, the entire economy is going to collapse.
Right.
And so they passed it without ever thinking about what the hell they were doing or probably even reading the bill because, well, the banks told us the economy is going to collapse. I guess we better vote for it. Because let's err on the side of caution. I don't want to be the guy who voted against it and then like we don't get it and the economy actually does fail. Yeah, like and so these guys are cowards and they're afraid too, but it's like this is why we don't give them all our money and we don't give them all this power because ultimately they're going to be put in positions where they're afraid and they make stupid irrational decisions where like we're right. sitting here like saying, "Hey, don't do that. That's our money. Let those banks fail." And these guys are like, "Oh, well, I might not get reelected if I don't vote for this."
And they're so already they're doing they did that with the January 6th stuff. Like it put fear into our legislators that they're like, "Oh shit, they actually can come in our place of work and intimidate us." So now they're trying to charge the people that were involved, the hundreds of people that they're rounding up with sedition. And that's going to set a precedent for any other kind of rioting or protest that may turn or be labeled as rioting. Because I'll tell you firsthand, like peaceful protests get fucked up 90% of the time because cops accelerate it.
Yep. Yeah. And we've seen that. And then we've seen them like do it like undercover, try to sneak away, and then they get outed as being cops. There was a lot of that stuff in there was this big riots that kicked off last year, like around March, April. The first one.
Oh, like up in
right
in
after
Portland
George
or...
Floyd.
Oh yeah. Like they were everywhere. There was Portland.
Yeah, I mean,
Seattle,
I mean, I guess we're talking about everything.
There
was everywhere.
Dallas like did some. I know. I don't know New York, but you know Minneapolis. Like they burned down a.
And those are only the ones we've caught. Those right. are the only ones we've caught. So, this is an interesting question. Apollo's asking, what's the difference between a racist and someone that does racist things? And I think this is interesting because it's like this is what I see. Like when everybody starts arguing over whether or not somebody was a racist because of something that they did, like ultimately, I think it's. I don't want to say it's completely irrelevant, but it's of little relevance, right? Like if somebody murders somebody, it doesn't matter if they hated them because of their race or if they hated them because it was their ex-wife or they hated them because they took their parking space. Like this person's going to jail for the rest of their life.
Right.
Or they're going to get shot back in self-defense and no one's going to feel sorry for him. But
I think
Well, I was just gonna say this is really just a motive, and the motive for a crime is really only evidence to prove that it was a crime, to prove that it was an intentional killing. Right. And like whether or not it's racism, I think is almost irrelevant. Because when you look at this and you say, like, let me see this question again. He asks, what is the difference between a racist and someone that does racist things? It's like, you know, you can kill somebody who's of a different race and without knowing the motive. Exactly.
I think it's based on individuals. I think each individual has their own idea of what would be racist. Like I grew up with a black family that, you know, I'm very, very close to. And I've heard them talk, you know, about different things that people were doing. And this is in like the South. This isn't like Oklahoma and Kansas area. So it's like, you know, there was that systemic type of race issues that went on, you know, even up until the 80s and 90s. And it's based off of your own individualist type idea of what is considered racist. Because one person might consider you killing that guy that stole your parking place a racist action. But then another person can look at it and be like, well, no, it was because, you know, he stole his parking spot or he got in his way.
Right. And, you know, it's like, okay, so let's say somebody is racist. Let's say they do murder somebody. You know, maybe it's a cop and they kill somebody. And this person is racist, but there is no such evidence to prove. There's no recordings of him, you know, saying racial slurs. There's nothing. All you know is that he killed somebody and it was obviously, you know, murder.
Right.
Does it matter if he was a racist? Like, ultimately, I think it's not that relevant. And I know that's probably going to upset a lot of people.
I think they make it relevant, like, to encourage people to be upset about the situation. It riles people up, like it did with George Floyd. A white guy put his head on a black guy's neck for 9 minutes while he was screaming for his life. Was it racially motivated? Did that white cop actually think, I'm going to kill this black guy? Or was he just a shitty person and a shitty cop and he treated whomever with disrespect? He had that elitist mindset. And that's a lot of problems with cops sometimes, is they think they're above the law. And I think that's a good, you know, instance with George Floyd. That cop that thought that he was doing what he wanted to do was right.
Right. And I mean, like, you know, we talked a lot about how they're trying to divide us using these tactics. And the reason that's so easy is because they make it emotional. And when we're emotional, we're not thinking rationally. And so, you know, it's easy to like say, like, oh, that person's a racist. I found out that person was a racist. That person should be executed, but they haven't actually done anything yet. It's just right. Knowing that they're a racist is like, because it gets you like all like wrapped up in your emotions. And I'm not saying it shouldn't, because, you know, racism is bad stuff. But like, it's so easy to just point at somebody and say, oh, he's a racist because he said something which was taken out of context, which like could be construed as racist, but he never like started a fight or killed anybody just because of their race. He never, you know, what? There's this comedian right now. They're saying he's racist, but he's got a black wife. It's a white comedian with a black wife, and they're trying to say he's racist. And then I saw some other guy say, you know, he posted a picture and, well, just because he's got a black wife doesn't prove that he's not racist, because sometimes racist white men get black wives as like some sort of like racist thing that they do. And I'm like,
try to hide from the public.
Yeah, but right, like that's what they used to say about gay people, when they're like, when you see a man and he's like overly straight, like he's like ridiculously straight, he's probably secretly gay. Or if he's extremely homophobic, he's probably secretly gay. Right. One of those kind of things. But what I thought was interesting is like this guy who said that, like I responded to his tweet. I was like, I could use that same argument on you. I could say, well, just because you say you're against racism doesn't really prove that you're not a racist. And therefore, I can assume that you're a racist until you can prove me wrong.
Right.
I mean, that's how ridiculous this is. And it's like it's emotions. We don't think rationally when we start thinking about this stuff. And that's why, and like, yeah, I mean, that's why I think we need to cool it down. And I'll even disagree with Morgan Freeman, because he said, you know, he was asked, well, what do you do about racism? And Morgan Freeman was like, just stop talking about it and it'll go away.
You know, a good example of like people working together and not having any kind of racist tension or anything like that would be like my experience in the Marine Corps. Like, it didn't matter what color you were, where you came from, who your dad was, how much money your parents were had, you know, what kind of schooling you had, where you grew up. You were all on the same level of being a piece of shit. Like your seniors hated you no matter what. And so I've never seen racism in the military that I was in. I'm not saying back in the day that there wasn't, like, with the segregation and whatnot, but everybody gets along regardless of what their race or sexual orientation, any of that. None of that shit matters, man. When you're in the shit and, like, overseas, it doesn't matter if that guy next to you is a black guy from, you know, Compton, or, you know, your buddy is into dudes. Like, shit doesn't matter when the bullets are flying, you know? And that's a good example, right, of how, like, we should start doing as a society is, like, stop focusing on the labels and the categorization that people put everybody in, and start working together as individual Americans. Like, start coming. And that's a big thing with this unity rally. I want everybody to come. I hope the left and the right show up, because I want to talk to them. I want other people to talk to them. I want, you know, my boys in the Boogaloo and my guys that are in the Liberty, I want them all to talk to them and say, look, we are on your side. We are all focused on the same end goal. We just have to figure out how to get there. And us fighting each other while the government in the background is throwing all these laws into Congress, you know, we need to be focused on that. That needs to be where we're focused on the criminal justice reform. These guys getting fucked over and sent to prison for, you know, 20 years for a crime that they either didn't commit or that they were just partially a part of. I mean, it's just everybody focusing on race, labels, who that person is involved with, what they do. It doesn't matter at the end of the day, because that's what they want us to focus on. That's what the government wants you to be looking at and worrying about. Because they're gonna be doing in the background, they're gonna be passing all these laws, and until finally it's gonna come together and we're all on level playing field as fucked.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to throw this in too, because I know, and I've had these conversations when. And, well, this is what I was going to say about Morgan Freeman. He says, you know, just stop talking about it. And I think that's wrong, because that's too extreme. That's kind of the extreme of not playing into, like, the bullshit that they're doing. Right.
Right.
But I think, you know, because I don't want to say that it doesn't exist. But I do want to say that. You know, because I mean, I've seen this stuff like personally, like I'll be hanging out with a black friend and the police come and harass us, and my friend gets harassed worse than I do, even though it's like, right, we're like, hey, like, I'm right here, buddy, what the fuck. And it's obvious, and Myra was even just saying that the policing system itself is racist, but I think that goes back to the point of, like, profiling, right?
Yeah, right.
If you're stopped and frisked, that's illegal in the first place. That shouldn't be happening, right? All this mistaken identity bullshit. No, if you stop that many people for a mistaken identity, you're not a good cop. You need to be fired. This is bullshit, right? Right. But that shouldn't have anything to do with race. This should be one of those things where you shouldn't have to prove the cop is, because what's he going to do? Say, testify, yeah, it's true, I'm racist. No. But the other thing I want to say is, like, because part of the creating this fear that everybody is racist makes us afraid of each other. And so when different groups are out in public, it's like, oh, I don't know if that person's a racist. Maybe I shouldn't talk to them. It creates a division. Right. Instead, like, recognize that this is fear that they're putting in your head with that specific intent, and talk to people who are different. I don't care if it's a different race. I don't care if it's a different gender or sexual orientation. Talk to an LGBTQ person, do whatever. Talk to a Muslim person, because holy shit, they've been telling us those people are scary for so long.
Right. I was that way. I thought Muslims were terrible for my time in overseas. Like I've seen like the destruction, And, you know, I categorized it as it being this sect of people and they were being untrustworthy. And I had to learn that that wasn't true, that they were just trying to defend their own land. They were just trying to defend their city centers from us going in there and forcing our beliefs on what they don't want. Not every country wants democracy.
Right. Well, they should want anarchy, but
right.
That's another story.
But I mean,
it's not our job to force it on them.
Who are we to say that you need to do this and because that, this is what we want you to do?
Right. And that, I mean, that goes back to the thing too. Like, you know, if every communist in the United States wants to live in a communist society, they should have that right too.
Right.
They just shouldn't be able to force it on anybody else.
And
like, that's the thing. Like, imagine this, right? Imagine a world where you have two cities. One city is completely communist. One city is completely anarchist. You have these two cities and like, I don't know, a band comes to play in a third city. And like both of these people from both of these cities are like, hey, we like that band. We like the music. So they go to it. Now you have the communists and the anarchists going to see a concert because they like the band. And they're making friends and they have nothing against each other because they're like, oh, you're from the other town. Like, who cares? I'm happy in my town. You're happy in your town. And like, we could talk about our towns, right? We could talk about, oh, yeah, we have this cool stuff. You should come to visit sometime. You don't have to stay. I know you don't like communism, but you can at least like come check it out. You know, hang out for a week. If we stop trying to force other people to live the way we want to live, then we can all live the way we want to live without interference.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's super, super important. But unity, that's what it's really about. So while a lot of bullshit politicians are out there talking about unity, while at the exact same time trying to shut down anyone who opposes them, this rally is actually about unity. So Austin at the park, what's the name of the park?
Butler Park. It's right on the Riverwalk. It's between 6th Street and South Congress.
And April 24th, and it should be an awesome time. Saturday. I will be there.
We're going to have journalists come that are going to be documenting too. So I'm hoping that we can get a more good optics for our movement and just what we're trying to do in general. And show that, you know, we are creating this group of people that want to work with all you other groups of people. Stop hating on us. Stop trying to think that we're Nazis. I got doxxed by Antifa and they wanted to tell me that I was a Nazi. Dude, my great 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 grandfather was the first free man in Kansas to own land. Like, I'm white, but I also have other ethnicities in me, man. Like, I'm the farthest thing from a Nazi. And we need to come together with Antifa and all these left wing groups and start get to the table and talk and compromise and come to an understanding. That's what this is all about. You don't have to take what we want and use it, but we don't have to take what you want either. But we can compromise and find middle ground because there is middle ground.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it is.
Awesome. All right, Trent, it's been awesome having you on the show. We have the website in the link, but you want to give us that website real quick?
Yeah, it's redactedcaucuslp.org. And then if you want to look us up on Twitter, I'm trying to get more active in Twitter and we're gain an audience. It's at Caucus Redacted.
Nice.
And Dan is one of my followers. I'm one of his, so you can find it on Dan's profile if you can't find it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Anything else you want to plug?
What about your campaign, man?
Oh, yeah. Head over to danforfreedom.com. Check it out. There's a lot of cool information there. Yeah.
I got one more thing. I just got put on a campaign committee for Stacey Prusman in New York. She's running for mayor. She's a libertarian candidate. Go check her out. Nice. She's got a great platform and she's trying to fix a lot of the issues within New York City that has been getting worse and worse and worse and worse, it seems, by the day.
She's got her hands full, I'm sure.
Oh my God, yeah.
Oh man, awesome. All right, well, if you enjoyed watching the show or listening to the show, or even if you didn't, make sure to share it. Make sure to head over to taxationistheft.cards and support the show. Buy one of these really awesome hats or t-shirt. Anything you do helps keep us on the air. And spread the information to people who need to hear all this stuff. Is, of course, this is really important information. This is how we change the world, by spreading the information and waking people up. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast from. And I think that's about it. I'll catch you next time.
Later.